Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. On the way to this conversation, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, you can learn more about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. And before we introduce Margaret Flowers to you, a bit of breaking news that just happened is that the Supreme Court had a 4-4 tie in Friedrichs versus the California Teachers Association, which means that the suit was brought by six fundamentalist Christian teachers who said they did not want to give money to the California Teachers Association, even though they were represented by them. That means the lower court ruling stands and the Teachers Association won, which means unions have not lost their political power completely yet, which is a good thing.
Big win.
I just will throw that out to you, a little commentary as well. Margaret Flowers, welcome to the program, who is a candidate for U.S. Senator for the Green Party, co-director of RetireEconomy.us, and organizer with Popular Resistance, and denied your place on the stage last night at Goucher College in the Baltimore Jewish Council's debate.
That's right. Thank you for inviting me to be on the show so I could have have a voice. It's nice to have a voice.
So what happened last night? I mean, a bit of a history, because you were invited at first to take part in this debate, which included Democrats and Republicans.
Right. So this is a really interesting experience running for U.S. Senate as a Green Party candidate, because I knew that our system was designed to exclude third-party candidates, but I'm seeing how deeply entrenched that is and how organizations within the state actually are complicit with that. So I am on the ballot in November. I am facing a primary. The Green Party does have a primary. It's not a state-funded primary, because guess who wrote the law? only the Democrats and Republicans.
Is there somebody else running for the Green Party besides you?
We have some races in the Green Party in Maryland multiple candidates also for a congressional district.
Uh-huh.
But the Green Party, one of our four pillars is democracy. So every candidate has to run against at least none of the above. So that way, you have to be elected. You can't just say, I'm going to run for Senate and then take it for granted. Because if the people in the Green Party don't think that you would represent them well, they'll vote against you and you lose the nomination. But the point is that we're this is a really unique time where people are looking for alternatives, and we should be having a broader public dialogue than we're having, and excluding my voice is restricting the dialogue on important issues. So I've really been pushing against nonprofit organizations in particular, because they're mandated by the IRS to treat all candidates equally. And so a number of groups have understood that, Open Society Institute, some of the
Social Black Charities, when you called us and said, how come we're not in that debate?
I
remember that, yes.
Right. So they looked at the law and they said, and they dealt with it. So Baltimore Jewish Council invited me back on January 7th to participate in their Senate forum with Republicans and Democrats, and I immediately agreed. And then they contacted me a few weeks later and said, we have to move the date to accommodate Chris Van Hollen's schedule. Can you still participate? I said yes. They sent me a really nice letter saying, you're invited to the VIP event beforehand, and here's what the format's going to be, and we look forward to our voters getting to know you as a candidate. And then 2 weeks before the event, I get this email that says, we have too many people that have responded, so you're disinvited. So I wrote to them and I said, well, you know, that's not really a good justification for disinviting me. And then they said, oh, no, it's because you're not polling at 5%. We're only choosing people that are polling at 5%. So I sent them the legal information from the IRS, and also made the point that the Green Party party members had not been polled, and that if they had been polled, I imagine that I would have gotten a very, a good percentage, definitely more than 5%. So then they just started backtracking with all these excuses, and I met with the executive director, about it. And basically what it boiled down to is I got an email on Tuesday saying, we're excluding you because we can. We talked to our lawyers, and we're excluding you because you're not on the ballot for the primary, which is not correct. I am on a ballot for the primary. It's just not a taxpayer-funded ballot for the primary.
So you showed up last night.
I did, because as I said, we're not having the dialogue that we should be having. And people, even you know, I sat through the first half, which was the Republican candidates, and even they were saying people are looking for an alternative. And that's this political environment that we're in with Sanders and Trump, you know, the outsiders that are actually doing better than expected because people are looking for that. So they acknowledge that. But then my voice is excluded. And so I felt like it was another one of those moments. It was one of those like, aha, like I need to stand up and say, this is not democracy if we don't have open debates. So
when the Democrats came to the stage, you attempted to get on the stage? Is that what happened?
I got right up on the stage and I said, and, you know, Andy Green said, okay, would the candidates come out? And so I stepped up on the stage and I said, you know, I'm Margaret Flowers. I'm running for U.S. Senate as seeking the Green Party nomination. And I was initially invited to this event and I want to participate in this event. I was ready to answer all of the questions.
And the audience supported you. For the most part, it sounded
yeah,
like.
Was it? Oh, I didn't get to stay for much of it, but I understand that they did. Yeah, because
did any of the candidates or any of the moderators speak up for you at that moment?
They had not made it out on the stage yet, and it's interesting they didn't come out as soon as I started speaking. I imagine they didn't want to step out on that stage with me. There were people in the crowd that started chanting, let her speak. And then I understand that after I was taken out, a young man stood up on the stage, took a seat and said, there are more parties and, you know, Green Party voices should be heard. I understand from a professor at the university that her students had come expecting it to be a Democratic, Republican, Green forum because that's how it was initially advertised. So people want to hear alternative voices. And
I think that's true.
I saw a tweet. I'll get it. I do know how to tweet, but I don't know how to talk about it. I saw a tweet from someone who said it's really hard to tell the difference between Van Hollen's and Edwards. And on the issues. And that's why I needed to be up there, because that would have pushed the debate.
So how do you see yourself different than Van Hollen and Edwards when somebody says that? I mean, that could be true, could not be true. I mean, I think there is a difference.
Well, I answer the questions, for one thing. What I see between them is a lot of kind of like evading real answers. I would talk about solutions that are not being talked about. I feel, you know, I'm not critical of them as people. I think that they're doing what they can do within the party structure that they're in. But the Democratic Party and the people who fund it control the agenda. And so that restricts the debate. And I don't have that. I don't take corporate money. I don't take PAC money. I am free to tell the truth and talk about all these great solutions that are going around in Baltimore, around the U.S., around the world, that we could be using here to solve the crises that we're facing.
So folks, do join us, 410-319-8888. We're talking with Margaret Flowers, who is running on the Green Party ticket. Most likely will be running on the Green Party ticket for the U.S. Senate here. She's in her own primary. She was invited to, then disinvited to the debate that took place last night, which is one of the reasons we invited her here today, because she was disinvited and wanted to invite her in to talk about that disinvitation and what she really does think. 410-319-8888. Email us here, talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us @MarkSteiner, 410-319-8888. So what would you have said last night?
Well, it was interesting. The first question they asked
was what?
Was about Barbara Mikulski's legacy.
Uh-huh.
And that was an interesting question, because the way that I would have answered that is I'm really kind of disappointed with some of the ways that she has failed Marylanders. And two very specific examples. One is the gas refinery that's being built in the neighborhood of Cove Point in southern Maryland. It's a gas refinery, power plant, and an export terminal for fracked gas being built by Dominion. And it's the first one to be put in a densely populated residential community where there are, you know, 2,400 families living in a 2-mile radius. There's 19 daycare centers and 2 elementary schools. And this facility will be dumping more than 22 tons of toxins into the air every year. Plus, it has the risk of explosion, which would cause serious injury. And so the people of that community have met with elected officials at every level. And they met with Barbara Mikulski's. They wanted to meet with her. She wouldn't meet with them. So they met with one of her staffers. And they said, we want a quantitative risk assessment. That has not been done. We need someone to order it. It would show that this facility should not be put where it is. That's all we're asking, is just do the study. And her office never got back to them, never took any action on that. If I was, you know, as a senator and a physician, I would be all over that. We would not put these people's lives in danger. And then the second was the The blimp, the surveillance blimp.
Oh, the blimp.
You know,
the one that got untethered and floated away.
And knocked down all those power lines on the way, yeah.
Right, right.
So that is a blimp that the Pentagon didn't even want. But Barbara Mikulski found $3 billion and funded it anyway. If I was going to find $3
billion. $3
billion? Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, $3 billion. You know what I would have done with that? In addition to supporting our public schools, in Baltimore, we have Sparrows Point. We have this area that was a manufacturing area. There is no company or anything in the United States that is manufacturing clean transportation. And so we could use that $3 billion to create the first clean transportation manufacturing plant in the city of Baltimore. We have tremendous expertise in the state from the universities that we have of engineers that we could put together a hub that would provide good jobs for people in the city and solve part of our climate change at the same time. So these are the two big areas where I see that recently she has failed us.
So you weren't aware of the other questions I asked.
Oh, the other questions, they asked about the Iran deal. I would have built off of that.
What would you have said about the Iran deal?
I think that it was a first step. I mean, the reality is that I haven't seen any evidence that Iran was trying to build nuclear weapons. You know, they've always been very cooperative. I think that the United States should be leading the way in terms of disarmament instead of spending $1 trillion over the next 30 years to upgrade our nuclear weapons, which is creating tension around the world. You know, when you see a very aggressive, the U.S., which is willing to go out and bomb countries that we aren't even at war with, then we're upgrading our nuclear weapons. That's got to be scary. We could spend that $1 trillion and provide 14 years of free public college education instead. But again, it's a matter of priorities. So I think diplomacy is really important. And so I would have built off of the Iran deal. But I think we need to go farther with our foreign policy of respecting human rights, of respecting international law, disarming our own nuclear weapons, and respecting the sovereignty of other countries. We intervene, and our intervention has caused the destabilization in the Middle East. And so we need to take a whole different approach of pulling back. All of these countries that we've interfered in had nonviolent movements that were fighting for democracy, and our intervention stifled those and opened a vacuum for extremists to come in. So we can't bomb our way to peace. We have to step back and provide aid, non-military aid, you know, for basic infrastructure and food, and allow those countries, the people within those countries, to build the kind of government that they want to have.
We're talking with Margaret Flowers, who was denied the right to be part of the Democrat-Republican, was going to be green debate taking place at Goucher College that was run by the Baltimore Jewish Council. 410-319-8888 is the number here. They were the only sponsor, right? Am I right?
It was Goucher College and BJC, right?
It was both. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Kadria, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello?
Kadria, you're on the air. Kadria, there?
Yes, good morning.
Kadri, could you turn down your radio? Can you turn down the radio? Kadri, excuse me.
Yes, tentatively.
Excuse me. Could you turn down your radio so we can hear you?
Yes, I'm here. Tentatively, I would vote for you, Ms. Flowers, because I like what you said. One more. The radio's off. All right, the radio's off.
No, it's still on, but.
Ms. Marsteiner, the radio's off.
Okay, go ahead.
The next thing is, I like what she said. Also, I want to just make one comment about that nuclear thing with the United States. The person before you was talking about fairness and the pattern that they have set up against in the world. Fairness, you know, the state of Israel, that is a state that is sponsored by the United States, mm-hmm. built by the United States, backed by the United States, and they have nuclear powers.
Right.
How come the United States doesn't tell Israel to stop their nuclear ambitions?
That's a great question, and I think that, you know, it's obvious to so many people how hypocritical the U.S. foreign policy is. So we're giving the greatest amount of aid to Israel, $3.7 billion a year, and they're asking for even more. And that's being used to basically, you know, create genocide of the Palestinian people and apartheid. And, you know, and it's the same thing if you look at, you know, our other ally in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, and the human rights abuses that are going on there, or in Bahrain. And we don't say anything about the human rights abuses that they engage in, but we criticize other countries for their human rights abuses. So I think we really need to change the way that we behave and be more of an example.
So, and I know that was some people have alluded to the possibility that was one of the reasons you were not allowed in the debate last night.
Yeah, it's a big question. You know, of I got kind of a hint from some people that there was a definite goal of excluding me. And the way that they kind of backtracked every time we said, well, they made an excuse and we said, well, that doesn't make sense. They make another excuse. And it was pretty obvious that they were trying to keep me out. And you know, I think we have to be honest about what's going on with Israel. And I have a lot of friends and, you know, close friends who are of the Jewish faith. And it seems like there's a real kind of divide going on of kind of younger versus older, and how many of the younger people of Jewish faith are seeing that, you know, we're not against people of Jewish faith, we're against what the Israeli government is doing. And even the United States recognizes that the settlements are illegal settlements. So why are we supporting?
Yeah. So talk a bit about what as a Green candidate, when you look at issues of taxation, economic development, stuff mm-hmm. that is kind of the nuts and bolts of what people have to figure out how to manage the society, mm-hmm. What are you saying that is different than what either the two Democratic candidates are saying or any of the Republican candidates
That's
are saying?
That's a really great question, because there are some really neat solutions out there that people are not even talking about. And some of them were pretty mainstream not that long ago. So in terms of looking at overall development, what we have right now is a model that's very extractive. You know, we give a lot of tax money to large corporations to come into our cities, and in return we're supposed to get some jobs and maybe a few little perks here and there. And those companies, we see it right now with Under Armour. How, you know, I just saw last night that they're starting to allude that, oh, if they don't get this big TIF, they might actually leave the city and look for another place for their headquarters. And that's how big corporations hold our cities hostage and say, well, you have to give us this money or we're going to leave. An alternative to that that's going on around the country, and it was really spearheaded by our own Gar Alperovitz at the Democracy Collaborative at University of Maryland, is to build a different economic model looking at anchor institutions in the city like our universities and our hospitals that need to procure goods and services, and then creating worker-owned cooperative jobs, especially for those who are least employable, to provide those goods and services. So those jobs are not going away. They're rooted in the community. They build community wealth. They lift up our most disinvested in communities so that they can have a decent life and to live with dignity. That's one. Another one is public banks. Instead of doing these TIFs, we should be putting our public money into public banks, which would then be used to leverage to pay for infrastructure. We have a lot of infrastructure. Look at all the abandoned houses that we have in Baltimore. We need to transition to a clean energy economy. We could use the money for that and repairing a lot of the infrastructure that we have. And then another one is moving towards a basic guaranteed income, which would immediately eliminate poverty. And in the 1970s, McGovern and Nixon, the Democrat and Republican, both ran on a platform of a basic income, guaranteed income.
Let me stop here for a moment. We do forget this history.
Right.
That even Republicans and Democrats were both, back in 1972, saying there should be a guaranteed income for people so they do not fall below a certain level as a way to deal with poverty in America.
Right. It would completely eliminate poverty, eliminate the need for poverty programs, and everybody would be able to meet their basic
needs. And we forget
that
people like Ronald Reagan, as much as his policies, I think, helped destroy a lot we have in this country, he even said in his debates, and as Bush agreed when they were debating in their debates, that we should have an open border with Mexico. I mean,
yeah, look how far we've come. I mean, I think of Nixon as our last progressive president, right? You know, like he ended the war, he created the EPA and OSHA. And that was because of popular movements.
And spied on the rest of us.
And that's the important thing to remember is that, you know, my work for the last 10 years has really been about movement building and learning how do we build political pressure for progressive change. And it is about people exerting the power, making the demand, setting the agenda, putting things on the table that are not there. And then you need to have some champions in the Congress or in the, you know, whatever legislative body to work with that movement to be able to be the arm on the inside. And that's why I'm running, because I think we're facing all of these crises. There are solutions to all of them. For many of the crises, the solutions are supported by people. They're not being talked about or put forth.
So let me ask you this in the time we have left. We'll, of course, have you back for a longer conversation.
Great.
Over the next few months. Several times before the general election, but the one of the shows we did earlier this week, yesterday, was about the article written in Harper's on legalizing drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of the article was a quote from Ehrlichman, who was Nixon's chief of staff, saying that we created this war on drugs to stop our enemies, the anti-war left and black people,
mm-hmm.
and to demonize them and put them in prison, which led to this war on drugs, which has put hundreds of thousands, millions of black men and people
women.
Of color and women in jail.
Right.
So you're the U.S. senator. You can't change it all. But so what's your position on what you do about this legacy of the war on drugs and what has to change and how do you change it?
Right. So the war on drugs is exactly what you said. It was designed to oppress people that were rising up, and it has completely failed in terms of dealing with the problem of addiction. As a physician, my approach to that is a public health approach. And again, there are lots of great examples of things that are being done. I mean, one is I think marijuana needs to be taxed and regulated. We need to end the prohibition of marijuana. We need to stop jailing people for use of a drug that's safer than alcohol, right? And it's been shown around the country and other states that are doing this that it works. It doesn't cause, bring on problems. But looking at like heroin addiction, in addition to the types of treatment that are out there, and we should have treatment on demand because that works the best, is a new thing, fairly new. I mean, it's being done in Switzerland and other countries and now starting in Canada. It's called heroin-assisted treatment, where there are clinical centers, where people can go to purchase heroin at a white market price. It's much less expensive. They can use it in a supervised setting. And then there are wraparound services to help them pull their lives back together. And they're finding that people within a year want to get off of heroin because they've repaired their relationships. Now they have a place to live and a job and things like that. So we need to kind of end this criminalizing of it and make it a public health program. And so how can I do that? I mean, as a senator, I'll have a platform to talk about it, to educate about it, to work with state and municipal legislators to help them find the resources that they need to put in place these programs.
So a political question before we have to end. I mean, mm-hmm. You were excluded from this debate. Your primary is on May the 1st, taking place by mail and people showing up.
It starts April 2nd and concludes on May 1st. Right.
So people can mail if they're Green Party registered.
By April 5th.
Right.
Yeah.
They can then send their ballots into the Green Party headquarters, which is in Baltimore.
Right. Right. 23rd and St. Paul.
But then you also have May 1st as a day where people can also show up at that headquarters and vote.
In person.
For either saying yes to you or no to you and saying which one of the three men who are running for mayor and the Green Party ticket will be the candidate for the Green Party.
We have a number of city council races as well as president of city council, and we have two congress members in the Baltimore area.
Oh, this is my
running
for president of city council too?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Connor Meek.
Oh, Connor Meek, okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Oh, Connor Meek wrote the letter to the editor about...
Right, about being held up or something.
Right.
Yeah, so...
Right.
Yeah, so... And an interesting thing about the Green Party primary is that because it's not taxpayer-funded, we're allowed to create our own rules. People who are ages 16 and 17 can come and vote in our Green Party primary, as well as people who are not documented, who otherwise would not be allowed to vote, can come and vote in our primary because we believe the four pillars of the Green Party are nonviolence, sustainability, social justice, and democracy, and we try to live those values.
Well, I'm sorry you were excluded from the debate last night. I'm glad you could show here today. And if we are fortunate enough to be able to put together a senatorial debate for the general election, you clearly will be invited.
Thank you. And I will attend. And I hope that people will check out my website, flowersforsenate.org.
Margaret Flowers, thanks so much.
Thank you, Mark.
We're going to take a very brief break, and when we return, a interview I've been looking for to a long time. Dr. Shakti Butler is with us. The last time she was going to be with us, we were snowed out. She was snowed out. But tonight's day, and she's here. Don't go away. We'll be right back.